Welcome to Stock Stories, episode 134. Welcome. This is the Stock Stories Podcast. My name is Alex and I am your host and stock storyteller for today. Thank you so much for joining me. This is the show dedicated to helping individual investors make better investing decisions. And how do we do that, you might ask? Well, we look at case studies of real companies, mainly in the S&P 500. We like to get into the nitty-gritty, understand what the business models are. We even look at the history, the current financials, and just try to piece everything together. What does this company actually do? Where have they been? Where are they now? And where are they going? Those are the questions we're trying to ask as investors. And then secondly, we learn through mental models. Mental models are basic principles and thought experiments that allow us to make better decisions. It's how we frame things. It's how we look at things in a different perspective. So those are our main tools that we're using here on this show. And again, my name is Alex, your stock storyteller. I'm here to help you on this journey. And last week, we talked about our very first real estate investment trust on the show. We talked about Simon Property Group. Now, I hope that was interesting for you as much as it was for me, getting into the details of how REITs actually work and looking at one of the most well-known ones. Well, today we have another REIT for you. It's another competitor in the commercial mall space. So, hey, without further ado, let's get into it and talk about Macerich. Macerich, ticker symbol MAC. So Macerich is a real estate investment trust like Simon Property Group we talked about last week, and they own and develop high-end mall properties. That's basically what they do in a nutshell. So if you want to learn about the basics of that business, go ahead and listen to last week's episode. So the way that these episodes are structured, I'd like to first start out with the history and then move into the business overview. And then after that, we'll look at some basic numbers, some basic financials of the business, and then wrap up with some closing thoughts. So as far as where this business came from, it was started by two men named Mace Siegel and Richard Cohen in New York back in 1964. And the reason it's called Macerich is just a combination of their names, Mace and Rich. So it started out as Macerich Real Estate Company. So similar to Simon Property Group, they spent many years outside of the public markets, just developing their business, acquiring properties, and growing their overall business. And in 1994, Macerich went public, and REITs actually were starting to become a more popular investment vehicle around this time. So they went public in 94 and they became a publicly traded REIT. And they kept growing. In 2002, they had a big acquisition. They acquired a company called Westcor for just under $1.5 billion, getting 9 properties out of that deal. And Westcor used to be a commercial real estate developer from the Phoenix area with properties in Arizona and Colorado. So that was one of their bigger moves in recent history, their bigger acquisitions. And then in 2005, they obtained another 11 commercial properties from the portfolio of a company called Wilmorite Properties for over $2 billion. So they've had these big acquisitions. They actually almost got acquired by Simon Property Group. Simon Property Group tried to acquire Macerich a few years back in 2015, but management rejected the bid. Simon Property Group bid almost $17 billion for Macerich, but they felt like that wasn't a high enough price to sell out for, and so they rejected it, and that was that. So Macerich has definitely held its own as a big commercial REITs in that space. And one interesting thing I found in my research is the connection between Macerich and the Ontario Teachers Pension Plan. So up in Canada, in Ontario, there's a pension plan, just like there are many pension plans here in the United States for various states, for various professions like police officers or firefighters or teachers. There's a pension plan in Ontario called the Ontario Teachers Pension Plan, and they own over 23 million shares of Macerich, which equates to about 16% of the entire company. So there's a lot of Canadian teachers out there that are counting, at least in some small way, on Americans continuing to shop at high-end malls for their retirement. And obviously, the pension plan is very diversified across many different businesses, and they're not all in on Macerich. But it's interesting to note that investments like these, you know, REITs are somewhat of an alternative investment vehicle. They're not your typical stock or your typical bond that shows up in a lot of different people's portfolios. REITs are a little bit special because they focus specifically on real estate and they pay out fat dividends, basically. They pay out a lot more money in income than your typical stock does. And so you can see why something like a pension fund would be pretty interested in a company like Macerich, because as we'll see later, the dividends, they can be pretty high depending on the situation. So they can provide a lot of income there in a portfolio. So let's talk about the business itself. So management likes to refer to themselves as, quote, the premier pure play high-end mall REIT, end quote. So that's a pretty big statement. I mean, you're basically saying that you're the best high-end mall REIT out there, which I'm sure Simon Property would take some issues with that. But Macerich owns 47 regional shopping centers and over 5 different community centers. And so they're relatively big. They've got properties spread out across the United States. They're not really international yet. They don't have a lot, or actually, I don't think they have any international properties. They're really focused on the coasts. So you can think of the West Coast of America, East Coast, and then some properties in places like Illinois and Colorado. So there are 4 ways that the company does business. And this is a little bit different view than what we looked at with Simon Property Group. This, although they basically do the same kinds of activities, but these are the 4 areas. Number 1, they make acquisitions. 2, they lease and manage property. 3, redevelopment. And then 4, new development. So let's talk about them one by one briefly. So first, Macerich is not shy about buying existing commercial properties that it sees potential in. In fact, it looks like this has been their main growth strategy over the years, and it makes sense. Remember from last week's episode, as a REIT, you are legally required to pay out at least 90% of your net income to your investors as dividends or distributions. And so because of that, there's not a lot of money left for internal growth. So usually end up going to the debt markets or the equity markets in order to finance buying new property, buying and redeveloping new property, and acquisitions are a naturally big part of that. So there's been a lot of acquisitions over the years, as we just saw. Now, as far as leasing and management, the approach that management takes to how they actually manage their properties is kind of in a decentralized way. So they don't want their corporate people, their corporate workers off at all these different malls trying to manage them. They set up these on-site management teams and put them in place to be responsible for that particular property. And then they basically just report up to headquarters. So one of the advantages with this type of management system is you kind of let each piece of the puzzle do their own thing. For example, if you have a staffing team in Phoenix, Arizona, for example, and there's a mall out there that you have to deal with, well, the team in Phoenix, they can handle their own business. They understand what the Phoenix marketplace looks like. They know what retailers are doing. They can see the trends with crowds. They're there on the ground. And all they have to do is have good communication with headquarters for Macerich in order to make good high-level decisions within the business. And this is something that is similar to a company like Berkshire Hathaway. So Warren Buffett, he's not sitting around making decisions about what See's Candies should do with their fourth quarter product launches. Like, he's not involved in those day-to-day decisions. Him and all of the other owners at Berkshire Hathaway, including Charlie Munger, they let management do that. They have a team of CEOs that work for them that run businesses, and they basically keep their business culture intact. So one day we'll talk about Berkshire Hathaway on an episode of its own. I'm looking forward to that one. But as far as Macerich is concerned, it's this kind of decentralized management style that is something that they like to do with their properties. So as far as redevelopment of properties is key. If customers don't find malls exciting or attractive or fun, then they're not going to go there. I mean, let's be honest. Would you go to a mall that just started to get run down if you had other options, particularly just shopping online? No, you probably won't. So management looks for opportunities to buy properties and then redevelop them for higher income potential. This is really where the money is, and this is really, frankly, where survival is right now with mall REITs, with these types of businesses. People just aren't going to traditional malls anymore because the incentive is just not that strong compared to online shopping. So malls are having to basically reinvent themselves, as we talked about in last week's episode, with some kind of lifestyle center or other different mixtures of restaurants or different types of stores or shops. Those are the kinds of things that Macerich is looking to do as well. And then, of course, there are new developments. So that's something that management at Macerich says they want to do on a selective basis. They don't want that to be their main growth strategy. And to me, that makes sense that you would have to be more selective with this, because when you're buying an existing mall, you have an existing set of data there. It's already done. You're just improving upon what already exists. But if you're building a new location, you have to scout out a location, you have to do in-depth demographic and traffic pattern research. All sorts of things have to be done for you as an intelligent business owner to build up something new. And then at that point, you have to put up a large amount of money to construct the project, and then your overall rate of return has to be worth it after taking into account all of those costs and all of that time. Now, when you buy an existing business, a system already exists, and you're just kind of tweaking the variables a little bit. You're improving things. So that's something that's not as big of a part of Macerich's strategy, but something that they do mention that they also do on a selective basis. So as far as the people who pay Macerich money are their tenants. The tenants at these malls, they're the ones that actually pay the rent, right? They pay the rent at these properties. So they rent to a wide range of anchor tenants. And just as an example, these include companies like L Brands. If you're not familiar with L Brands, they're the company that owns other subsidiaries like Victoria's Secret, Bath & Body Works, etc. There's also H&M, Forever 21, The Gap, and all their portfolio of companies, Dick's Sporting Goods. It goes on and on. So about 17% of the revenue for Macerich comes from the top 10 tenants. Now, each tenant may have multiple brands and stores, kind of like I mentioned. So they rely heavily on these kinds of retail stores to make their money. Now, the biggest anchors by least square feet. So you can imagine a mall, like who actually has the most space and is selling things in that space. Their biggest anchors are Macy's with over 2 million square feet, and then JCPenney as well, again with over 2 million square feet. So I haven't looked in detail at those businesses, Macy's and JCPenney's, but you can kind of tell if you've been to one lately, there's just not as many people in those kinds of stores as there used to be. And this is, again, just the secular trend of foot traffic going down in malls and people shopping less and less at big department stores, especially because there's just other options, particularly e-commerce is competing heavily with these businesses. So that's a little troublesome knowing that some of their biggest anchors are struggling right now. So let's look now at the financials. How has all of this qualitative data about the company, how has this translated into how much the company is actually making? Because that's important to look at too. So for the sake of comparison, as usual on the show, we'll only look at two different main points of data to get a general trend over the past several years. So we'll look at fiscal year 2012 data as well as last year, 2019. So first we'll start with sales. So the sales of the company, this is the lifeblood of the company. If you have no sales, you have no business. So in 2012, Macerich brought in just under $900 million in sales. And in 2019, they had about $930 million in sales. So really not a huge change here. I mean, they managed to make more money on a revenue basis, but it's very small. And frankly, it's actually a little bit impressive because of the secular trend downward in malls, and based on who their tenants are, they managed to maintain their revenue. But still, that's not really a situation you want to be in. You want to be increasing your revenue at a solid rate in order to have pretty good potential. Now, what about the income? What about the profits? So they made over $360 million in 2012 and just over $100 million in 2019. Now, that's a huge drop. But make no mistake, this is a misleading number because when I looked further into it in 2012, there's a huge gain from a sale that the company made. So that distorts the numbers a lot. What we should look at more so is funds from operations. Funds from operations, that's what's more accurate in order for us to understand a clearer picture of how much the Real Estate Investment Trust actually made. So the funds from operations in 2012 was about $580 million, somewhere around there. And then that decreased to about $540 million. So there's a decrease there. And you can imagine with basically stagnant revenue, even with some cost cutting and trying to maintain, they still weren't making that much more money. And in fact, they lost some money. Not lost money as far as negative profit, but their funds from operations went down slightly. So how does this translate on a per share basis? Well, the diluted funds from operations per share, that's how much you and I would receive as our share of the income. It went from $4.30 to $3.80. So again, that's a dip. Nothing too exciting there. Now the cash levels have doubled. They were just barely $65 million, which is really small for a company like this. They went up to $100 million as of last year. So now relative to the debt load, I'm not that impressed because the long-term debt, it was over $5 billion in 2012, and now it's over $5 billion still. It hasn't really increased that much, but there is a lot of notes that are payable by the company. And then there are also lease liabilities that have to be paid by Macerich. So you can count those as liabilities as well. But let's look now at the cash flow statement. Now we know how the diluted funds from operations looks. We know how the income looks. What about cash flow? What about the actual money moving through the business on an annual basis? Well, in 2012, Macerich had about $350 million in operating cash flow. And in 2019, guess what? That number was basically the same. It was just over $350 million. So the business has kind of been on this just steady state mode, really, financially speaking. And then as far as the investing cash flow, it ebbs and flows just based on acquisitions per usual. And the financing cash flow has been moving around too. So there's a few hundred million dollars going out of the business and financing cash. Now let's talk about these dividends, right? Because as far as the value of the business, if the business isn't growing at all, well, we're not really going to expect much share price appreciation, right? No, we want the dividends because that's pretty much why people buy REITs, is for those big dividends. So in 2012, the company was paying out $2.23 per share in dividends. And in 2019, that figure rose to $3 per share. So this is about a 4% annual growth rate in the dividends on a per share basis, which is not bad considering that the payout has been pretty high. I mean, the company spent over $320 million on dividends in 2012, and now they spend over $470 million. But this has changed as of late, and I'll get to that in a moment. Now, as far as the shares outstanding, this is one bright spot. They haven't really diluted shareholders that much. They've had about 140 million shares outstanding this whole time for the past several years. So that's not a big component of total return either way. Now, let's talk about the valuation and just some general thoughts that I have on Macerich as I'm looking through this data and going through the history. So Macerich is one of the largest mall REITs that's out there, and they do seem to have a lot of properties that are high quality. They have some properties over where, or at least one property over near where I live, and I've driven by it, and it seems like a pretty nice property. And also just based on their website and a lot of the locations that they name, it seems like they do indeed have a premium product in a sense. They have these premium mall outlets. But the problem is, does a premium mall outlet matter if malls are not going to exist anymore? Like, that's kind of the existential question. Now, I argued back in last week's episode that Simon Property Group had something interesting going on because they were redeveloping these spaces. They own all this real estate. It's not just about the mall, it's about the real estate. Can the real estate act as a community gathering place? And I think in the long term, yeah, I think that it can. People will always want a place to gather and do business and gather and do different things. There are certain things that simply can't be replaced digitally, even though many things definitely can be replaced digitally. Definitely want to acknowledge that too. So this is kind of a tricky situation because qualitatively, it's a little hard to understand, at least for me right now, from what I've seen, what the implications really are with COVID and with this change, this radical shift to digital transactions and what that's going to mean for these community gathering places. So as far as Macerich is concerned, they have a reasonable number of properties spread around the US, but they don't have diversification in other countries. So that's one negative thing against them. Also, the debt profile is pretty rough. I mean, they only bring in around $350 million in cash flow, but they have to service a debt load of over $5 or $6 billion. I mean, that's once you include different types of liabilities. And this is pre-coronavirus. Like, this is last year's numbers. This is before things changed for the worse in general. So in 2019, their interest expenses, so how much they had to pay on their debt, just in interest, was somewhere around $140 million. Now think about a business that's bringing in $350 million in cash flow, and you're paying $140 million in interest. That's kind of like getting a paycheck, let's say, for $3,500 a month for your salary, but $1,400 a month has to go to the bank in interest payments on your credit cards. That's kind of analogous to the situation that we're looking at here. So it's a rough situation as far as the debt. But here's the thing about Macerich, and this is why I got so intrigued with it, is the valuation right now. So currently the stock trades at just $8 per share. Now the funds from operations last year was $3.80 per share. So during normal times, let's say, quote unquote, you're looking at a price to funds from operations ratio, which is kind of like a PE ratio, but for REITs, of 2.1. Now, if you flip that around, take the reciprocal of that number, that's an earnings yield of 47.5%. So basically, it's saying that for every dollar that you put into this stock, 47 cents is going to be made as your share of the profit, or more particularly, the funds from operations. Now, that's pretty incredible. I mean, a PE of 2, that's for any quality business, that would be absolutely amazing. But the thing is, I think the reason it's trading so low is that Macerich's quality, earnings quality, is really in question right now. We don't really know exactly what's going to happen. And the debt load, I mean, the balance sheet is just not looking that great. They're paying a lot of money out in dividends and paying a lot of money out in interest. And so there's just a weak balance sheet here that I think is kind of a bummer. So as far as the dividend yield, it's definitely lower than it used to be. It's lower than it otherwise would have been. The board of directors recently announced that they were going to be reducing, but not eliminating, the quarterly dividend to 15 cents per share in July. So we're looking at 60 cents per share on an annual basis. Now, take that 60 cents per share and divide that into an $8 per share price, and what do you get? That's about 7.5% dividend yield, which is really high. So there's something there. Now, this makes total sense. I applaud the board of directors for doing this because we are definitely in unusual times and they need to preserve cash. Like, they need to survive right now, especially with their debt load. So it's kind of an interesting situation because you've got a business of maybe like mediocre quality, at least relative to something like a Simon Property Group, but its valuation is just so low. So you could definitely make money from this if things work out, but that's a really big if. So even though there's a lot of debt here and the quality isn't the same as Simon Property Group, the relative debt to cash levels of each corporation is about the same. I mean, Simon Property Group just has a lot more properties and it's more diversified geographically. So that's something to consider. And the valuation here is just so low, but it only matters if the future cash flows can match those of the recent past. And I do not know if that's going to happen. I mean, I don't know. It's just kind of a tricky situation because, yeah, the business is of worse quality, but its valuation is so low too. So going forward, there's no doubt that earnings will get hit hard for at least a few quarters, but it remains to be seen if companies like Mace Rich, companies like Simon Property Group are really going to bounce back and mall traffic will come back somehow if these redevelopment efforts are going to ultimately be successful. I have a feeling that they ultimately will. I just don't know how long it'll take. And I think that is a big question. And not only how long will it take, but to what extent will there be successful gains in foot traffic and therefore sales at these stores? And whether or not it's stores or fitness centers or condos or whatever it is, the real estate needs to be productive. It needs to be generating revenue and therefore generating profit for the parent company. So I don't really see a whole lot of convincing evidence here that redevelopment is actually successful. So I don't really know if Mace Rich would be that great right now, but it's hard to say. That valuation is really tempting, especially when you compare it to what Mace Rich can do. You know, as far as its recent numbers, we know that it can make money for sure. It just has a lower quality balance sheet than something like a Simon Property Group. So I'll leave you pondering that, and hopefully you can gain some insights from that. I'm a little puzzled with it myself, just trying to understand the relative valuations and understanding like how much does quality really factor into this. So, but there's a big fat dividend yield of 7.5% right there. So there's something to be considered there. But those are my thoughts on Mace Rich. And that's going to do it for the episode today. So thank you so much for listening to Stock Stories, for tuning in. I really appreciate you listening. And if you listen all the way to the end here, hey, props to you. Thank you for checking this whole episode out. If you want to connect with me, I would love to talk with you. You can reach me on Instagram. Just go ahead and send me a direct message at Stock Storyteller. That's at Stock Storyteller. Or you can send me an email. I've been getting a couple of those from you guys lately. So thanks for the emails as well. Email me at alex@stockstoriespodcast.com. And I would just love to know your story. What does your investing story look like? Are you a beginner investor? Are you experienced? What kind of things are you trying to deal with? I would love to know. And also, if you are a fan of the show, if this show has helped you in any way, I would like to ask you for just one quick favor. If you enjoy the show and it's been helpful to you, please share the show with a friend this week. Share the show with someone who you think would also benefit from the things that we're talking about here. If you share the show, that really helps it grow and will ultimately help me and you later in the long run. So thank you in advance for that. I really appreciate it. And we'll see you next week. Thanks. Information presented here on Stock Stories is for informational, educational, and entertainment purposes only. You and you alone are responsible for your investment and financial decisions. Please consult an appropriate tax, legal, or financial advisor that can analyze your specific situation in the context of your goals and circumstances.